Cunningham. Today's programming is made possible in part by the advocates of Minnesota Public Radio. Contributors include the City of St. Paul Star Grant. Places to go, things to do at ilovestpaul.com.
It's 6 minutes past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Acton. Glad you could join us. It's an annual rite of spring. Every year, it seems, the Minnesota legislature goes down to the wire, putting in long, exhausting hours at the end of legislative sessions, trying to finish the legislative work for the session. But even legislative historians may look back at this year's legislative session and shake their heads. According to the state constitution, the Minnesota legislature must adjourn by Monday night. Of course, it's Friday, the weekend before adjournment, and as of this morning, legislative leaders still hadn't reached the broad agreement on taxes and spending that would set in motion that last-minute rush to adjournment. House Republicans were still holding out hope that there was still time to meet Monday's deadline, but Senate DFLers were saying earlier this morning that it would be impossible to finish by Monday. And Governor Jesse Ventura has been saying that if the legislature doesn't finish its work by Monday, Minnesotans should prepare for a government shutdown come July 1st. Today in Midday, as we head into this final weekend of the legislative session, we're going to try to catch up on just what is the latest at the Minnesota State Capitol. We are hoping this hour to be able to talk with some legislative leaders. We will be checking in with the governor's office, and we're going to get some perspective from two former key legislators on what's happened and why. First of all, though, let's review where we are. Legislative leaders met into the early morning trying to reach that overall agreement, and they failed. Minnesota Public Radio's Michael Kuh reports. Well, apparently we don't have that report available for you at this time. But what happened last night? Well, let's bring in our other legislative reporter, Laura McCollum, who is standing by at the state capitol. And Laura, first of all, if you could put on your best Michael Kuh voice, maybe you could explain briefly what happened last night, and then you can explain to us what's been going on this morning.
Well, I'm just such a pale imitation of Michael Kuh. I can't do him justice. But, yeah, Michael Kuh was here till very early this morning staking out these negotiations. Basically, they walked away and said there's no deal. The context of what was happening last night is they were talking about this basically backup plan. What happens if we can't reach a deal by Monday? Should we try this lights-on strategy, basically a way to make sure that state government continues to function if the governor won't call a special session, if there's a possibility that government services would not be funded after July 1st, should we plan this backup idea? The problem is that House Republicans are saying they don't like that idea. I mean, they would need tripartisan agreement to go forward with this, and House Republicans say, what's in it for us? There would be no tax plan, no big tax cut, if they would go that route. Apparently, the one thing they have all agreed on is that there will be this rebate. So I think regardless of which scenario plays out, people should be getting their rebate checks this summer. I suppose that's good news for everyone. But, you know, I think this lights-on strategy is just really difficult for people to comprehend or think of. It's never been done in this state. We sort of saw it at the federal level a few years ago. Didn't work too well there. So there's not a lot of enthusiasm for that. Now, as of this morning, yes, legislative leaders met with representatives of Governor Ventura's administration. The governor was not in on the talks. He said he doesn't plan to be in on the talks today. The governor's office made legislative leaders another offer. They emerged from the talks, said, we can't tell you what it is, but we're going back to our respective caucuses. We're going to see if we can reach agreement on this. So there's still hope, but I think the consensus is that what is most likely is that they will reach some sort of a deal by Monday night, and they will still have to have a very short special session and come back, you know, have a little cooling off period, work some of these things out in conference committee, and they would still have to come back for a day or so in special session if the governor would be willing to do it. Now, the advantage for him, if he were to call them back in special session, is then he could probably get a lot of his initiatives. You know, as it stands now, if there's just a lights-on proposal, he won't get his big property tax reform and his tax cut that he wants. So there's some incentive for him to say, they force my hand. I have to come back and call him back into special session.
Hmm. Well, yesterday, as you know, Laura, the governor really blasted away at mm-hmm. legislative leaders in that speech at the Minnesota meeting that we had on the air at noon. has that had any impact?
Well, you know, it certainly doesn't help the tone of discussions. And of course, you know, reportedly the other night when he was getting angry with House Republicans for not giving on some of their offers, he, according to House Speaker Steve Swigum, he said, "I will bury you." That's kind of the quote of the hour lately. But I think there's plenty of blame to go around in this one. Yes, he is trying to paint the legislature into a corner and say it's completely their fault. Not everyone sees it that way. Some say the governor should share some of the blame because, yes, he laid out his budget 4 months ago, but then has remained fairly hands-off and said, "Here's my budget, take it or leave it," and has not really been willing to negotiate with them or tell them if there's any wiggle room on any of his proposals. And let's be honest, no governor gets everything he wants, so Governor Ventura had to have known he wasn't going to get his complete package, even though he described it as the sweater. You can't take off parts of it. You know, since he couldn't get all of it, some say he should have been more involved in the negotiations all along. But, of course, he's saying it's completely up to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, so right now, there are talks underway in both the Republicans and Democrat caucuses. Is that correct?
Right,
About where do they go next? In mm-hmm. theory, you're saying there may be some proposal to break the stalemate?
Right, from the governor's office. But, you know, like I said, there's not a lot of enthusiasm for this lights-on strategy, although I think Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe has indicated it would be acceptable to him. But then, you know, he's not as enthusiastic about this big tax cut that Republicans want. So there's less for him to lose if they go ahead with the lights-on strategy, other than, you know, that would include a very minimal increase for most state services. The professional employees, for example, MAPE, the union that represents state employees or many state employees, was walking through here and just said, you know, lights-on is not an option. We're in the middle of contract negotiations, and this would devastate that, and our employees can't deal with that. And then, of course, the alternative, which would be government shutdown on July 1st, they're saying, well, then our people will walk off the job, whether that means prison workers, whether that means people who supervise sex offenders. They said, we're not, you know, even if we're essential state employees, we're not indentured servants. We don't have to work for no money. So they're, you know, they're trying to force the legislature's hand, too, and get away from this worst-case scenario, which is government shutdown.
Very briefly, Laura, as the big the leadership tries to figure out what to do here, is the rank and file doing anything at the Capitol? Are they meeting and talking about anything else?
Actually, the Senate is in session right now, and they're talking about redistricting, another contentious issue that's been pretty much pushed to the back burner this session. They have to come up with new legislative and congressional districts as a result of the census. So they're taking up that plan in the Senate and will likely pass that on the floor today. The House, there was some sense that there might be some stadium talk on the floor. There's a proposal that would, I think, basically gut a lot of the ballpark proposals that are out there. And, of course, legislative leaders are not real excited to have a big stadium debate on the floor when all of this, the rest of this, is hanging in the balance. So they're going to try to avert that. But, yes, there are still floor sessions. Conference committees are scheduled to meet. Whether or not they have a lot to talk about remains to be seen.
All right. Thank you, Laura. And if you get word now on these meetings and what legislators might do next, why, make sure you let us know.
I will.
Okay. Thanks very much. Minnesota Public Radio's Capitol Bureau Chief Laura McCollum joining us from the state capitol as we await word on whether the latest proposal from the governor's office has a chance of breaking the stalemate at the state capitol. If you tuned in late, this is Friday, of course. Monday is the constitutionally mandated adjournment date for the Minnesota legislature. And there is a long way from where legislators are to where they are supposed to be by Monday night. There is still apparently no broad agreement on taxes and spending, a broad agreement that's needed for each of these conference committees on education, transportation, and the rest to work out their parts of the package. We are waiting word from legislators as to what happens next. A little later on, we're going to be talking with John Woodley, who is spokesman for Governor Jesse Ventura. Joining us right now are two veterans of the legislative process to try to provide some perspective on what's happening and what's not happening. Republican Duane Benson is a former Senate Minority Leader. He is now the Executive Director of the Minnesota Business Partnership. And DFLer Ember Reichscott-Young is a former Assistant Majority Leader in the State Senate. She is currently president of the Minnesota Women's Political Caucus. And we invite you to join our conversation. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call here, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Also, if you're near a computer, you might want to log on to our website and get up on the soapbox. Have your say about doings at the Capitol. MinnesotaPublicRadio.org is our website address. Duane Benson, Ember Reichscott-Young, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Gary. Good morning, Ember.
Good morning. This is interesting.
Normally there's some frantic last-minute work going on at the Capitol at this time, but this does seem extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, in my 18 years there, this is unprecedented, and I think overall is not a good thing. I think that if they do this continuing resolution or this lights-on strategy, I think it would do some serious damage to the state's image and to the whole decision-making process in the future. So I just think that's a bad solution. I think we should either just resolve the situation, and if that's impossible, then go into special session and resolve it right.
Duane Benson?
Yeah, I think that that Amber is probably right. I don't think, because I'm over the Capitol some, that there's a lot of support for this notion of keeping the lights on or continuing resolution, because it kind of delays the problem. As Amber said, it really doesn't solve much. It delays something, but it creates more problems than it solves. And so if in fact they can't resolve this, there is precedent for setting a date, June, pick a number, 15th, and we're going to call you all back. In the meantime, there's some expectation that you work it out. That has happened in the past, I think in 85. Certainly in the early 80s, there were a lot of special sessions. Governor Perpich, I believe in 89, called the legislature back around state fair time to resolve his proposal on a tax bill. The only thing you can say about history, I guess, is it happened a long time ago, and it doesn't repeat itself.
Well, more recently, though, Duane, if you recall, Governor Arne Carlson, I believe it was in 97, vetoed the education bill, and we all came back to fix that up and do the tax credits. But this is tripartisan government, and it continues to surprise. So we've had the first year it came together, the second year we had the three-way split, the third year it's like it's a new solution, and I think we're just still struggling to find a way to make this work.
Well, it's fair to say, Ember and Gary, that we don't have really any precedent for tripartisanship. It's really never happened in any other state in the union, nor has it happened here. So, you really don't have a roadmap, and they're still trying to figure this process out, and it is completely different.
Well, and if I can add to that mix, Roger Moe has been the veteran. He's the leader. He's the anchor, and he knows how this process works. And the other players still are relatively new to this process. Governor Ventura was not as engaged the first 2 years. He's trying to be engaged a little bit now, but he doesn't have a lot of experience. Speaker Spigum is also new in his role, even though he's had a little experience. I think, if anything, last year when he did the three-way split, he got some criticism for his compromise. So now he's perhaps a little more gun-shy here. So you've got two sets of leaders with less experience, and I think that also is contributing to it.
Can we, Governor Ventura at the Minnesota meeting was very, very, very critical of the legislators, especially the legislative leadership, and posed the question to the audience at the Minnesota meeting, what were legislators doing for 5 months? Pretty reasonable question.
I think they've been working hard. I think the real question is the one that I asked yesterday, and that is, if you are close in trying to get things done, and you're about to achieve some of these landmark initiatives like property tax reform and such, Why would you walk away? Why would you threaten shut down and walk away? I think there's a leadership style issue here of the governor. His answer was to that, and I continue to think about it, his answer was something like, well, I was there for 2 hours last night and it didn't work. Well, exerting leadership is more than a two-hour meeting. If they're in a room, you've got to keep them there, and if they're that close, I think the governor could exercise leadership and bring this together. So that, in my view, is where we are right now.
Well, there's that old adage, I believe it's in golf, you drive for show and putt for dough. And I think they've been driving a long time, and now they're spending a lot of time reading the greens, and I think that time has kind of caught up with them. And you couple that with this notion of tripartisanship, it really is a negotiating game, and Amber and I have watched it down through the years. It doesn't make much sense. I think it was Winston Churchill said that strange thing about the way they do things in America, they make all the mistakes they can before they do what's right. And in some respects, they have to try a lot of things, and they got into this time crunch. I still think it can be done. It can be done not only before a shutdown, which would be July 1st, it still conceivably could be put together before Monday. The problem is the manufacturing of all the bills. The Human Services bill is almost 700 pages, taxes 550. The revisor's office that does all the drafting, if we see a blackout, it's because of an energy draw. And I don't know if they can put it together. The governor then could say, well, you have till Wednesday to finish. So there are some possibilities yet as we get even into these waning hours.
Let's get a couple callers on here with some questions and comments. Joe's on the line from Edina. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, first off, I know the comment I may get back might be a little bit of a song and dance from the respective parties and whatnot, but my perspective on this is that they have gone into these special sessions before. In any other place in industry, if you consistently go to work and do not get your job done on time, you get fired. And when is it that the legislator will start to live into the real world here? They knew that this deadline was coming. They knew the work that they had to do. There's no surprises here whatsoever. And I somewhat will agree a little bit with the governor, which is a little bit rare for me, that they had plenty of time to do this. And I really wish that they would wake up and live like the rest of the world has to do and do the job that they're paid to do and quit whining that they don't have enough time. They've had a great plenty of time.
Okay. Amber?
Yes, I agree. I mean, if in a perfect world, this legislature should get the job done, and I agree with the caller that is what the goal should be. And if they don't, then there's enough blame to go around with everyone. Let me just share with you where I think the pressure points are. Number one, I think the Speaker Spigum on the House Republicans has got a concern about compromising. Once he aligned with the governor, I think he felt it was two against one, they should win, and so he really hasn't wanted to compromise, and perhaps his caucus hasn't let them. The problem is you have to compromise in order to come to a final resolution. With Roger, I think he is a veteran at compromising, but I think his mistake is coming at even looking at doing a continuing resolution, and that's taking very good time away from the bottom line problem of resolving it. And with the governor, I think his threats are not helping matters and that he should be in that room constantly. So I think there's blame to go around. And with one last thing about this caller is that I think short term the governor does win. I think he blames the legislature and the people are going to really look at the legislature with a slanted eye. However, I do think that the governor in the long term is the person who is really responsible here. And when the government is in trouble, the governor is the government.
Well, I think Joe raises the message, and appropriately so, that if they don't get this deal cooked, that the governor is going to wear them out. He's going to bloody them over however long a period of time. The message that Joe is raising is the one that the governor has. He carried it yesterday. And you see a lot of heads going up and down when he delivers this. You had 5 months. What did you do? You did pop cans. You did tattoos. You haven't done the budget. So I think that's a pressure point that the public, like Joe has represented it, wants something to get done, and they want it to happen soon, and the governor can carry that message. Now, what he does internally, I think, has also been pointed out by Ember, is how he puts this thing together. But he has the upper hand here in the bully pulpit.
Let's see. We have a caller on the line from Maura. Murray, go ahead. Whoops. Murray, so let's go on to a caller from Minneapolis. Joe, your comment?
Hi, good morning. I think yesterday showed the governor's strengths in leadership. I agreed with him. I don't agree with him on a lot of things, but I think what he showed was that he said to the legislature, you had these 5 months. Why should the Minnesota citizens pay for an extra session when this time has basically been wasted? And it seems like only Governor Ventura has that ability to be so plain-spoken and so forceful and also get away with it. And I thought it was a really good showing of his leadership skills, because I think most people agreed with him. I did.
Okay.
Well, again, I think that the governor, unlike any situation we've ever seen in any jurisdiction throughout the country, it's so unique. I mean, he doesn't have, I think he has one person in the entire legislature in his party, which means he doesn't have to protect anybody in the legislature. And by the same token, there's no one in the legislature to speak for him on a consistent basis. But I think if you would look at his measurement of believability in the general population, it's very strong. It's, I would guess, twice probably what it is in the legislature, because he does kind of say what's on his mind in a simple way, and what he's saying on his mind that's on his mind currently is resonating with the general public, and it also is, I think, resonating with legislators. They want to get this done, and they're torn between how much they have to give up in order to do it. Again, I want to emphasize that if they don't do it, I think he's going to have a field day on them.
I think the governor is going to attract a lot of support with his stand, because, after all, he is blaming the legislature, and I think that the legislature, if they do this continuing resolution, will deserve some of that blame. But I also think the governor could use his popularity and his political capital to bring this together. One suggestion I'd like to offer is having a negotiating team that is one Democrat and one Republican, maybe a veteran from past wars like you, Dwayne, on one side, and maybe a past Democratic speaker.
Hey, I'm not buying into this one.
Well, I'm offering this to you here, but I'm just thinking that if this team could work with this governor and try to negotiate with the parties, the governor really doesn't have that sort of structure in his leadership team. And Pam Wheelock, who has done a tremendous job on the finances, really is not the policy person overall. So maybe this team could do it. We shouldn't give up, and I still continue to say that the governor shouldn't walk away. And in the end, I think the governor is going to be the one where the buck stops here and where he's going to be responsible if the lights turn out. And that's how the people, I think, will see it later on when real problems start to arise.
Well, I don't think that the lights are ever going to shut out. I mean, I think that they're going to get this done. But I think that the governor's position of his ability to sell himself, his believability and all those other things being so high, that if that ever would happen, and I don't believe it would, he would not be labeled the Newt Gingrich. I think the legislature, either leadership or all of them, would be more in that box, because when he says, you've had five months, callers like Joe call in and say, he's believable. His message is resonating with me. So I think that who's at the greatest risk right now is the legislature.
Let's get one more caller on here before we break for news. And if all goes well, we have Murray finally on the line. Sorry for losing you earlier, Murray.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to say that I think that the governor's stand on this issue, his threat, is unconscionably irresponsible. I was a supporter of his when he ran for office, and I was kind of excited that we were going to probably get some change and some straightforward type talk out of the governor. But I'm a little bit tired of his bullying, and as far as the word resonating, it might be resonating, but I don't know if it's resonating in a positive way.
Okay.
It kind of reminds me of the guy who says that if you're not going to play the ball game my way, I'm going to take my bat and go home.
Okay. Thanks, Murray.
Thank you.
Practical matter before we break for news here. What is it that the governor could do if the basic disagreement is between Roger Moe and Steve Swigum and the folks they represent? What is it that he's supposed to do to break this deadlock?
He's supposed to do what he did this morning, which is to make another offer and try to bring them together. You know, the irony is this governor is really on the verge of some landmark reform in property taxes by taking the education costs off the property tax. And in areas like women's health and teenage pregnancy prevention, he's got a lot at stake here. He could have a landmark session. And so if he can participate that way, I think that there's real incentive for him to do so.
Well, I think there's probably a number of things, and I think the governor's growing in the job, like most executives do as time marches on, of working, of not only bringing them together, but working them separately, you know, with a phone call, a cup of coffee, and those kinds of things. However, we don't know that is not occurring right now. So, you know, some of those things are skills that just haven't been developed. You know, Pam Wheelock, as Amber said earlier, is very capable in these. Unfortunately, she's had a death in her family, so she's not around. So there's some of these kind of factors that are out there that most people aren't aware of as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break here. We're talking this hour about what's happening or not happening at the Minnesota legislature. And at this point, last we heard, legislators were meeting, trying to discuss... the latest proposal, suggestion from the governor's office on how to break this stalemate. Monday is adjournment date. The legislature still has a long way to go before finishing its business. In fact, no broad agreement has been reached yet on the major tax and spending issues. And so this hour, as we head into this final weekend of the legislative session, we thought we would try to catch up on just where we stand. Two former legislators, longtime legislators have joined us, DFLer Ember Reichgott-Young and Republican Duane Benson. Mr. Benson, a former Senate Minority Leader, Reichgott-Young is a former Assistant Majority Leader, DFLer. And if you would like to join our conversation, if you have a question or comment about what's happening at the legislature, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And don't pass up the opportunity to join us online. Get up on the soapbox and have your say online, minnesotapublicradio.org. We'll get to more of your questions in just a couple of minutes.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Blandon Foundation, celebrating 60 years of dedication to strengthening rural Minnesota communities.
Not too long ago, market investors were in the money, enjoying a legendary bull run. Now the skies over the stock market are stormy and the bears are on the prowl. Hi, I'm David Brancaccio. So what's ahead for you and your investments? Get the latest from Wall Street and the rest of the day's business news weekdays on Marketplace from PRI.
Marketplace is on the air at 6:30 weekday evenings here on Minnesota Public Radio. Programming you're enjoying today is a gift in part from the members of MPR's Leadership Circle. We thank them. Right now, let's invite Greta Cunningham into the conversation with some news headlines. Greta?
Why, thank you very much, Gary. Good morning. Israel has launched a retaliatory strike for today's suicide bombing. Doctors say two people were killed when Israel shelled Palestinian security headquarters in the West Bank. The attack follows a suicide bombing that killed six people and injured dozens more. Authorities say an Islamic militant with explosives strapped to his body blew himself up today at the crowded entrance to a shopping mall. Islamic militant group Hamas has claimed responsibility. It says the bombing attack is the seventh of 10 planned explosions. Recovery efforts should begin soon on the Russian nuclear submarine that sank to the bottom of the Barents Sea last August. Russian officials have signed a contract with a Dutch company to help raise the sub. Russia's deputy prime minister says the recovery effort will start in July. Officials say the Kursk must be raised to retrieve the bodies and determine why it went down. 118 crew members died on the Kursk. Federal safety investigators say thousands of baby products are being recalled because of possible defects. Childcraft Industry is voluntarily recalling more than 4,000 changing tables. It says some of them were not properly assembled and could fall apart with the baby on them. They can be identified by two labels, one saying Childcraft Industries and the other Made in Italy. The tables were sold through such outlets as Sears and Burlington Coat Factory and cost about $150. In regional news, a Woodbury High School student can wear his Straight Pride sweatshirt to school. A federal judge in St. Paul has issued a preliminary injunction allowing 16-year-old Elliot Chambers to wear the sweatshirt to school. The school says it accepts the judge's decision. U.S. District Judge Donovan Frank found there was insufficient evidence to believe that a substantial disruption to school activities would occur if Chambers wore the shirt. The forecast for Minnesota calls for a partly to mostly sunny sky statewide with high temperatures today ranging from 70 to 80 degrees. At this hour, mostly sunny skies reported in. St. Cloud reports sunshine in 69. It's sunny in Rochester in 64. Duluth reports sunny skies in 68. And in the Twin Cities, sunshine, a temperature of 69. Gary, that's a check on the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 24 minutes before 12. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio, and we are waiting from word from the Minnesota State Capitol that legislators have reached some kind of an agreement which would clear the way for legislators to finish their work before Monday's adjournment. It is getting quite late. Legislative leaders met into the early morning and failed to reach agreement. Then they got back together again at about 10 o'clock this morning. And currently, last we heard, they were discussing a proposal from the governor's office on how to perhaps to break the stalemate. As we wait for word, we've been joined today by two longtime former members of the Minnesota legislature. Ember Wright-Scott-Young is with us, a DFLer, former assistant majority leader, and Republican Dwayne Benson is with us, former Senate minority leader. Mr. Benson, currently executive director of the Minnesota Business Partnership. Ember Wright-Scott-Young is currently president of the Minnesota Women's Political Caucus. Again, if you have a question or comment about just what is or is not happening at the state capitol, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Beth, your comment, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I listened to Jesse Ventura's speech yesterday, and I was just I was very impressed with him, with the straightforwardness. And for as much as I want to watch him carefully because of all the bad press he gets, every time I listen to him, he speaks his mind, and he speaks honestly. And I'm just so tired of the legislature, and they wishy-wash everything. Even the program today, I mean, nobody's taking responsibility, and you know, trying to blame tripartisan government. I mean, it's just such a joke. And I think he just called it straight out. You know, had they been more concerned with what they were there to do than whether or not he works a second job or, you know, pop cans in school. I mean, it's true. It's just the basic truth, and it's just ridiculous. And, you know, if these people had to do this kind of thing out in the private sector, nobody would hire them.
Okay.
And I'm just, you know, I really want to see them. I want to see Jesse hold their feet to the fire, and if he has to bully them, I think it's because the legislature appears to me and other people that I talk to be just, they're like high school teenagers. They're manipulating, and they're, you know, they're jockeying for their position and protecting their votes and whose party's going to win. And, well, you know what? People don't care. Just get your job done.
Okay.
Talk to your constituents, find out what they want, and then set your own personal agendas aside and just do it.
All right. Thanks.
It seems pretty simple.
Thanks, Beth.
Thanks.
Dwayne, Ember, quick
comment
here.
I think it is. I think we've talked about this. I don't use tripartisan as an excuse. And nonetheless, that's what happens. That's the way this place works. But Beth is absolutely right. The governor does impress people. He is honest. He does carry a strong message. The legislature should heed it, because if they don't get it done, he I think becomes not only stronger than he is now, stronger than most people can even imagine, because he will lay it at their feet ultimately. Now, having said that, there is one governor and there's 201 legislators, and they have almost that many opinions. So to draw all of that together is a bigger challenge than for one person to make their decision. But they have had 5 months, as the governor says, and they didn't get it done. And they roll out of here, and I think he will be pretty brutal.
No question he will be, and he will have reason to be. I said before that there's enough blame to go around, and he shares some of it, but we will be hearing a great deal from him about the legislature, and he is good at that and very convincing. The problem that the legislators have right now is that this is a highly charged legislative session from a political perspective. This is that unusual session once every 10 years where they're drawing new redistricting boundaries, and it's only a two-year term for the Senate. So everyone has election on their mind for this entire two-year period, and so it's a unique time of the cycle. That just adds to the political problems and, I think, the gridlock over there, and just absolutely feeds into the governor's hand at this point that this is about politics.
One last question, and then I'm going to let you go. John Woodley, we'll be talking with him for a while, too. But that brings us to another point that the governor made yesterday. Beth alluded to it, and that is that when all is said and done, legislators, in the governor's mind, are concerned only, if they're Democrats, about protecting the Democrats, if they're Republicans, concerned about protecting the Republicans, and in his mind, none of them are concerned about doing the people's business. That comes second.
Well, the people's business is a wonderful term, and some people their single issue is whether we should have pop in the schools or not. Their single issue is their daughter got tattooed and didn't tell anybody. So what appears to be small issues to somebody is really a big issue. And so they take, certainly from a generalist perspective, take way too much time on those things. But nonetheless, those are terribly important to some person or groups of people. So, this is a lot of structuring in the final analysis, and it's a lot of varied opinions, not only politically, but individually in the legislature. Roger Moe and Steve Swigum have a challenge that their caucuses aren't united in whatever they bring back. Not all of them are going to be happy. So they have this kind of mass, attempt to pull together one theme that makes this a lot more challenging.
I'd like to just separate the politics from the people. The politics are highly charged this session, and some bad results are seemingly taking place. But that's different than the people. And I want to put a plug in for legislators, because most legislators I have found in my years there are very hardworking public servants of integrity, and they really are working hard to try to do the right thing. So that's separate and apart from the politics. I think these are basically good people who really do want to deliver for their constituents, and they're all just struggling with how to do that and how to compromise.
Thanks so much for joining us, folks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. See you, Amber.
Bye-bye.
Comments from two former Minnesota legislators, former Republican Senate Minority Leader Dwayne Benson joining us, and also joining us, former Assistant Majority Leader Amber Reichgott-Young. Well, joining us now from the state capitol is John Woodley, Governor Ventura's spokesman. Morning, John.
Hi, Gary.
Care to tell us what it is that the governor has proposed to the legislative caucuses that, at last report, the caucuses were discussing?
Well, all I will say is that as I was listening to you discuss what was going on here at the Capitol with Dwayne and Ember, you mentioned that the Speaker and the Majority Leader were not able to come on the show today. That's a good thing for getting this done. They are, as we speak, working hard at it, and that's good.
How do you think this is going to pan out?
Well, I wished I knew. I thought we would have an agreement two nights ago, and I was wrong about that. But we can still accomplish something very significant here. It probably has to be done in the next couple of hours, and I'm hopeful that will be done.
The governor was pretty tough on the legislators yesterday when he spoke at the Minnesota meeting. Do you think that the governor bears any responsibility whatsoever for the current stalemate?
Well, if he does, I would be hard-pressed to come up with anything specific in terms of responsibility. You know, I suppose people could analyze this and say that, you know, he maybe should give in on this or that, and it would bring it to closure. But you have to understand, you know, where the debate is now. The legislature has taken his budget his tax plan and his spending plan that they received on the 24th of January. And, you know, they have left a lot of it on by the wayside. The Republicans put together their tax bill without the governor's expansion of the sales tax, without the governor's income tax cuts. And so he has, you know, he's been there and his proposal's been there and he has given in on stuff very reluctantly, but he has. And so, I mean, I don't know exactly what the governor could have done different. I think what we're talking about here is a system that has gone awry. It's flawed. And, you know, Amber Reichgott said earlier, very clearly, I think, that, you know, legislators are well-intentioned, struggling to do the right thing, to get this done. And, of course, they are. And, I mean, they're good people, and they're elected to represent their people and get the job done. And they're trying to do that. But they're trying to do it in a system that just has a stranglehold on them. That's the problem. It's the system, not the legislators.
Has the governor made a final, firm decision as to whether he would be open to a special session before July 1st, before a government shutdown, if the legislators don't get their work done by Monday night? Yesterday, he marched right up to the line of saying that he wouldn't consider a special session, but he didn't cross that line. Is he still open to it?
The governor's intention is to not call a special session.
But would he be willing to if push came to shove?
Gary, it's probably not about willing to. It's probably about being forced to. If the legislature does not get their work done, at some point there's going to have to be a special session. If they don't pass spending bills, appropriations bills, you know, we could probably exist without a tax bill. But we need money to run the government. And so, you know, the legislature can be in a position to force his hand. What he is saying is, don't force my hand, because it is not in the best interest of the people. You need to get your work done. You had 5 months, and the expectation is that you will get it done.
Mm-hmm. John, can we mix a couple of calls in before we...
Sure.
Okay, great. Lyle's on the line with a comment. Lyle, go ahead.
My comment is that this is an example that three-party system doesn't work. We've never had this problem before when we had the two-party system.
Lyle, now I'm going to interrupt you. This is John Woodley speaking here. Now, that's not true. And we've had this problem many, many times.
To the extent that we got it this time.
Gary, what do you think?
I'm not commenting. I'm just the bus driver.
I mean, and then my other comment is,
since the governor has been governor, since Governor Ventura was elected, we haven't had a special session. In the last 10 years, we've had about 8 of them. In the previous 10 years before that. So, I mean, Lyle, I know that every year seems like it's something new, but guess what?
Three-party system doesn't work.
Pardon me?
The three-party system doesn't work.
Well, actually, I think a lot of people would disagree with a lot of scholars who are observing this experiment here are saying that it has worked very well. And we're not done yet, Lyle. I mean, you know,
the tax plan.
I think we'll come out of this with probably the most significant tax reform that this state has seen in 30 years and that a lot of other states are trying to accomplish.
Well, it's easy to spin everything, but my opinion...
I'm not spinning anything. Well, I'm just telling you my opinion.
I guess my opinion... The governor's tax plan was very ill-conceived, and, of course, the two parties, the House and Senate, climbed onto what they could, and now we're in a situation. You can't resolve that.
Okay. Thanks, Lyle. Appreciate the comment.
Bye.
Let's go on to another caller here. Jeff, your comment.
I have a couple of comments. One is, although I'm a Yellow Dog Democrat, I am now convinced that we should have put the... not only should we have put the unicameral question on the ballot, but we should have approved it. And then secondly, the only way I would approve of a special session is if the legislators receive no financial gain from it all, no payment, no per diem, no nothing. They had to do it on their own dime. Those are my comments. Thank you.
All right. Without getting into a lengthy conversation here, John, about the unicameral business, how, practically speaking, would that change the dynamic at the Capitol? You still have people who tend to wait, and this is true not at, just at the legislature, but everywhere, tend to wait until the deadlines arrive before they make the tough decisions. You still have the same political pressures at work. It doesn't seem, when all is said and done, that unicameral would make much difference one way or the other.
The reason, Gary, I think that it would make a difference is that it would be easier to manage. A lot of this is management. And, you know, we can use examples like laws that deal with regulating hot dishes and tattoos and soda pop for kids and things, issues that, you know, as Ember said, are very important to some people, but, you know, sort of get in the way of doing the overall, you know, tax bills and spending bills that affect more people. And we could do both. You know, we can make, you know, have a state butterfly and a state muffin and do those things and have some fun along the way if it's managed well. But this system is so big and so complex, this bicameral system, that it is very difficult to manage. And so I believe that a unicameral system would be easier to manage. And if you start fresh and you design the system so that you deal with setting targets for spending and doing tax bill on the front end and saving times toward the end to do the peripheral issues, it could be managed better. That, I think, is the advantage.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to the immediate present. Laura McCollum back on the line from our State Capitol Bureau. Laura, any update from the meetings of the legislative caucuses?
No, they are still meeting.
Hi, Laura.
Sorry, had to turn the radio down. The only update I can offer, I did listen into the governor's radio show, and he was taking a lot of calls on this topic and was defending his participation in the matter, was kind of sparring with some of the callers who said he should step in and lock everybody in a room and get it resolved. And he said, I'm doing the best I can, and, you know, maybe we can get this wrapped up.
Okay. All right. Well, keep us posted, Laura.
You know, Gary, on that the governor should lock him in a room kind of thing, that is amusing to me. I mean, we have grown highly educated men, very capable, in this case men, capable of making good decisions, and it just seems strange that people think that the governor would have to get him in a headlock and keep him in a room and force him to say uncle. You would think that they would want to do that for the benefit of the people.
But that's kind of how negotiations tend to operate, are they? Do they not, John? I mean, you always hear about presidents, getting the heads of state together and locking them away. I mean, that's just sort of par for the course, negotiations, contract negotiations, and the rest.
Isn't well, the governor it? Did that on Wednesday evening, and, we were close to a deal, but it didn't happen. And so we tried that. It didn't work, and so we're trying a little different angle now. I guess you could say we got the B team working on it, and they're doing a very good job, and I think they're getting us close.
When all is said and done, is the governor so interested in an agreement that he's going to set aside some of the things that he laid down? He laid down some ground rules, really, for an agreement yesterday during his speech. Will he back off some of those if necessary to get some overall agreement?
Well, I wouldn't comment I wouldn't speculate as to where it will end up, but I think that the governor has already compromised, and it would be very difficult for him to go any further. I mean, we need to have a tax bill that takes over or abolishes the general education levy, and we need to have a tax bill that rebates 100% of the current biennium surplus. And we need to have a tax spending bills that limit the expansion of government.
Okay.
And I think that'll happen. Right. I think that's what, the thing about it is, I believe that Roger wants that in his caucus. I believe that Steve and his caucus want that, and I believe the people want that, and that's why I think it'll happen.
John, we have to run. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, Gary.
John Woodley, who is Governor Ventura's spokesman, joining us from the state capitol, where talks are underway, still trying to break that deadlock as we head into this final weekend of the legislative session. We, of course, will keep you posted here on Minnesota Public Radio. 5 minutes now before 12.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 18th of May, 2001. It was on this day in 1953, James Baldwin's first novel, Go Tell It on the Mountain, was first published. It's the birthday of novelist Edward Tanner, better known by his pen name Patrick Dennis, born in Evanston, Illinois, 1921, best known for his book Auntie Mame, 1955. It's the birthday of blues singer Big Joe Turner, born in Kansas City, Missouri, in 1911. Recorded with a pianist named Pete Johnson, songs like Roll 'em Pete and Cherry Red, and the song Shake, Rattle, and Roll, which became a rock and roll hit. It's the birthday of composer Meredith Willson, born in Mason City, Iowa, 1902. Played the flute and the piccolo in John Philip Sousa's band, joined the New York Philharmonic, became musical director for NBC Radio, and then started writing his musical, The Music Man, using his boyhood memories of life in a small town in Iowa. The character of Marion, the librarian, was based on his mother. It's the birthday of the Hollywood director Frank Capra, born in Sicily in 1897, moved with his family to California when he was just 6 years old, got into the movie business, worked as a prop man and a film editor and a gag writer, and then started directing pictures. Best known for his movie It's a Wonderful Life, 1946, with Jimmy Stewart as George Bailey. Also directed It Happened One Night, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, You Can't Take It With You. Frank Capra, who was criticized for the sentimentality of his films, and who said, I always felt the world cannot fall apart as long as free men see the rainbow, feel the rain, and hear the laugh of a child. It's the birthday of the architect Walter Gropius, born in Berlin, 1883, who developed the Bauhaus School of Art, which aimed to join art with architecture and design. After Hitler came to power, Gropius moved to the United States, where he was professor of architecture at Harvard for 15 years. It's the birthday of philosopher and mathematician Bertrand Russell, born in Ravenscroft in Monmouthshire, Wales, in 1872. Best known for two books, A History of Western Philosophy in 1945, and his Principia Mathematica in three volumes, published in 1910 to 1913. Bertrand Russell, who said, I have been painfully forced to the belief that nine-tenths of what is regarded as philosophy is humbug. The only part that is at all definite is logic, and since it is logic, it is not philosophy. And it's the birthday of the publisher William Heinemann, born in Surrey, England, 1863, founded his publishing house in London in 1890, published Stevenson, Kipling, Wells, Somerset Maugham, and the first English translations of Dostoevsky, Turgenev, and Tolstoy. Here are two little poems for today, two variations on a children's rhyme that you may have learned when you were small. Ladybird, ladybird, fly away home. Your house is on fire, and your children all gone, all except one, and that's little Anne, and she has crept under the warming pan. Cow lady, hide the way, hum, the house is afire, the children all gone, all but poor Nanny set under a pan, weaving gold lace as fast as she can. That's the Writer's Almanac, brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com. Where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.